Welcome to The Stream. I'm Heidi Jo Castro. It has been more than 4 years since WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange was forcibly removed from the Ecuadorian embassy in London and placed in a high-security prison in the UK. He is now fighting possible extradition to the United States. Today, we look at what's at stake if Assange is convicted and the international movement to free him. But first, let's listen to a message that his wife, Stella, shared with The Stream.
If Julian is extradited to the United States, he faces an effective death sentence. He faces 175 years. He is being put on trial under the Espionage Act, but for doing journalism, the most important journalism there could possibly be, exposing the truth about practices of torture, war crimes, civilian killings, assassination squads in Iraq and Afghanistan. The United States has also been illegally spying on his legal meetings with his lawyers and even plotted to assassinate Julian. So obviously, Julian will never face a fair trial in the United States, and he should never be sent to the country that plotted to kill him.
Joining us from Melbourne, Australia, is John Shipton, Julian Assange's father, who is leading a campaign to free his son. From New Jersey, we have Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Chris Hedges. And here in Washington, D.C., we have Kathleen McClellan, deputy director of the Whistleblower and Source Protection Program at Exposed Facts. And of course, you can also be a part of this conversation. Please share your thoughts or questions on our live YouTube chat. And I wanted to thank our three guests for joining us for this very important conversation today. John, to start with you and your son, how is Julian doing right now?
Not the best. It's getting on now into the 15th year of incarceration or persecution, and the fifth year of incarceration in Belmarsh Maximum Security Prison. So as you can imagine, not at all good. Dire, in fact.
Is there any news on his health?
We keep that private. But his health isn't good. Sure. And I just have to repeat over and over again. In 2019, the rapporteur, United Nations rapporteur on torture, Professor Niels Melzer, produced a report after examining Julian in jail with two specialist doctors that he had been the victim of psychological torture over a period of 7.5 years. That torture, that ceaseless, interminable court case has simply not stopped. It continues to this day. In fact, last week, the FBI wrote to a novelist, O'Hagan, who had written a book about Julian, seemingly reopening the case. So the rot continues, if I may use that expression.
Or at least the FBI is seeking new evidence, it appears. Chris, I know you're very up to date on the latest in this investigation. What is the FBI doing? What is the current status of this investigation?
Well, the FBI and the U.S. government has a fundamental problem, and that is that Julian has never committed a crime. Certainly he's not committed the crimes that they have charged him with. And so as someone who has followed this case from the beginning, we've seen what can only be described as a judicial lynching. And I have sat in the courtroom in London and then during COVID followed it online. The fact, for instance, that the CIA through UC Global, the Spanish security firm in the Ecuadorian embassy, was filming, not just filming, but even capturing all of his digital correspondence between him and his attorneys, eviscerating attorney-client privilege, means on that charge alone, that fact alone, the case should be thrown out. And that has always been the fundamental problem. So we've seen coercing this Icelandic figure to lie, and then he admitted. I mean, it's a kind of burlesque, and it really stems from that foundational point and remember, unlike Daniel Ellsberg, Julian Assange did not take the documents. They were provided, the Iraqi warlords, to him by Chelsea Manning. And I worked for 15 years for the New York Times. Part of that time as an investigative journalist, I obtained classified information and published it, just like Julian. There's zero difference. But of course, the vendetta is driven by the volume of material, the most important journalistic act of our generation, and then especially by the vendetta that is being pushed by the CIA over the so-called Vault 7 leaks. But yeah, I think the reason they're snooping around and continuing is because they don't really have a case.
And meanwhile, Julian is perpetually still behind bars in the UK. Kathleen, what happens to him, do you predict, if he is extradited to the United States?
Well, I think Stella's absolutely right. He would not be able to get a fair trial here. The Espionage Act is an arcane, constitutionally questionable law intended to go after spies, and it's been normalized as a way to prosecute people who've disclosed information to the public. And we've represented several people who've been prosecuted under the Espionage Act, including drone whistleblower Daniel Hale, who's currently imprisoned in a communications management unit, which restricts almost all of his contact with the outside world. And he was tried in the same district that Julian Assange would be tried in. And the Espionage Act prosecutions are plagued with secrecy. And most importantly, there's no public interest defense. So none of our clients nor Assange would be able to claim that he was acting, that they were acting in the public's interest, when in fact all of them were.
And there has been a very public campaign by U.S. officials, Kathleen, to try to discredit Julian Assange from the beginning. Some of that we heard from Chris and John, even reports of a CIA effort or discussions at least to potentially kidnap and assassinate Assange from the Ecuadorian embassy. How does that make it more difficult for him to receive a fair trial?
I mean, it certainly makes it more difficult. The government in these cases has always put out a scathing indictment and called the person a traitor, endangered troops on the field. Chelsea Manning was charged with aiding the enemy. The most serious charges possible are levied against defendants in order to make it difficult for them, certainly. But I think what makes it more difficult is the fact that the information, the evidence is kept secret. The trials are plagued with secrecy. Daniel Hale's case was they would shut down the courtroom and even excluding, you know, his attorney from the public trial at times. And in none of these cases does it really matter why someone disclosed the information. So that is extremely problematic when you're talking about criminalizing journalistic activity. Mm. And by normalizing the prosecution of sources, and now going after Assange for publishing, the next step is going after anybody, because there's simply no limit and under the law as to who could be prosecuted. In fact, Mr. Hedges could be prosecuted for having disclosed information just as easily and under the law. And it's simply the government's distaste for looking like they are hurting the free press. And that distaste is waning, we're seeing.
And we certainly will talk about
Heidi,
this.
I just want to throw in there a very important distinction. Because until Julian was charged under the Trump administration, those who were charged were whistleblowers, people like Daniel Hale, who I've actually gone up and visited, who released the drone papers, drone documents, Kiriakou and others. But this was now a whole new level. By going after Julian, they are targeting journalists rather than whistleblowers. So it's for those of us who are journalists, is seen as a very, very ominous step.
A dangerous precedent, at least risky. And earlier, Agnes Callamard, the Secretary General of Amnesty International, told us that it is the UK government's obligation to release Assange.
Julian Assange is facing charges for doing what journalists do all the time, publishing materials provided by a source, materials which a powerful state would like to keep secret. Those charges against him in the United States, his possible extradition and his probable treatment in the US constitute all of that, human rights violations and major threat to press freedom.
And there's also the question of whether the U.S. even has jurisdiction to prosecute a journalist who is a foreign national and operating in a foreign country. Kathleen, I wonder, Would this also set a dangerous precedent in sending the message that the U.S. Department of Justice could go after any foreign journalist based anywhere as long as their story is seen as a threat to national security?
Sure. I mean, I think it certainly sets that precedent, but I think even more importantly, it undermines the credibility of any nation who's trying, or especially the United States, but it undermines the free press globally because it takes away the United States's or anybody else's ability to say, look, my country's secrets are important. And so no matter where you're reporting and no matter how corrupt the government you're reporting on, if this prosecution is allowed to go forward, you will be at risk because it's going to embolden every government to take their secrets and take the information they want kept secret and prosecute journalists who try to publish it. And most of the revelations that the public needs to know about, especially in the area of national security, are revelations that the government wants kept secret because they're about government misconduct. And that's what Julian Assange worked with the mainstream media to publish. He did journalism. And so there's no distinction, and there's no distinction between him and American reporters working overseas reporting on other regimes there.
Well, let's look at one example of what Assange did publish. Earlier this year, Al Jazeera's Faultline spoke to the brother of Namir Nour El-Din, a 22-year-old Iraqi photojournalist who was killed by American soldiers in a 2007 helicopter attack. The video of that attack was released by WikiLeaks, and it debunked the Pentagon's initial claims that the civilians had been caught in crossfire. This is what his brother said.
وعندما شاهدت الفيلم شاهدت نمير يعني مباشرة يعني عرفت أنه هو نمير كانت لحظة لا أتمنى أن يمر بها أحد. تقريبا كل الكلام اللي كان يقال طيار مع القاعدة حفظته من أسمعه أنا بالليل أسمعه في ذهني ويتردد في ذهني بالليل.
John, that video that your son shared with the world is so difficult to watch this massacre unfold. But why did he believe it was so important for people to watch it anyway?
Well, I can't speak for Julian in that, you know, I can answer your question. Of course, it's important because it records two war crimes. One of the, which you didn't show, is the Good Samaritans driving their children to school, and a wounded soldier is crawling along the gutter. A wounded person. Namir is crawling along the gutter and they load him into the car to take him to hospital, and as a consequence they're all murdered by the pilot, and they have no guns, nothing, you know, they have just children in the car, and children were wounded. And it's obvious to all of us that the attitude of the soldiers to the ordinary Iraqi people is one of murderous contempt. And so we, all people, have in their hearts a yearning for justice. And as a consequence of that, we seek for those people who commit these crimes, these war crimes, one after the other, after the other, to be arraigned and face justice.
Yeah. And we saw in that example from Faultlines how meaningful it was for Namir's brother to be able to see the truth about his brother's murder. Does that make you proud of your son that Julian made that possible?
Oh, yes. I'm proud of Julian. Mm. But more particularly, I urge everybody with all of their strength to ensure the continuity of war crimes stops. Mm. It's, I mean, you know, like Brown University released a report, 4.6 million dead in 20 years in the Middle East up to date. Brown University's also released its report, its investigation, 38 million refugees. What is a refugee? It's a person whose community has been smashed beyond recognition. They're destroyed. Their towns are destroyed. Their lives are on edge. So they become a refugee and seek secure anywhere.
I wanted to ask you, because of these atrocities, Kathleen, has anyone actually been held accountable for these videos and other information that was publicized by WikiLeaks?
Not to my knowledge. You know, the people that have been held most accountable for all of these war crimes, which the government classifies its war crimes. And so the only way to find out about them is from journalists and their sources. And most of the people that have been held accountable, the only person to go to prison related to the CIA's now defunct torture program is John Kiriakou, a client of ours who blew the whistle on it. Daniel Hale is in prison for blowing the whistle on the drone program, and none of the individuals who perpetrated the drone program have been held accountable to my knowledge. Many have been promoted within the national security intelligence community, but that's all the more reason why this prosecution is so dangerous, because we so desperately need journalism in this area. We need this truth, because it wouldn't have come out without the work of Julian Assange and without the work of the Free Press or the sources who are providing the information. All of that is necessary to have a healthy democracy.
And, you know, that's the argument of a growing number of world leaders who are calling for Assange's freedom. They include the Australian Prime Minister, 48 members of Australia's parliament, the German parliament, the president of Argentina, the president of Mexico, and the president of Brazil. Let's take a listen to Lula da Silva of Brazil.
É uma vergonha que jornalista que denunciou as falcatruas de Estado contra os outros, esteja preso, sabe, condenado a morrer na cadeia e a gente não fazer nada para libertá-lo. É um negócio maluco, a gente que briga e fala em liberdade de expressão, direito de gritar, direito de... Ou seja, o cara está preso porque denunciou as falcatruas.
And Chris, we've heard from Da Silva, but perhaps even more notable is that a U.S. ally, Australia, its prime minister, and now a bipartisan group of parliament members, they're all asking for the U.K. to release Assange. Do you think that this pressure coming from world leaders is moving the needle at all?
No, I think that this is a vicious campaign of vengeance led by the CIA, which is a state within its state, like the U.S. military industrial complex. I just want to say, as somebody who spent 20 years overseas, seven of them in the Middle East, I was the Middle East bureau chief for the New York Times, that Julian did what I define the most important role of a journalist to be, and that is to give a voice to people who without us would not have a voice. It's what I tried to do in Gaza and Iraq and everywhere else. And of course, by exposing the war crimes and preemptive war, the very invasion of Iraq was a war crime, by exposing the reality. And remember that the collateral murder video was just a one example of what happened almost daily in the streets of Baghdad. And I speak as somebody who covered these conflicts. So it was just a tiny glimpse of the daily, weekly, monthly, yearly reality for people throughout the Middle East. And none of it, you know, if you follow the court case, it's completely apparent that not only is there no legitimate legal case against Julian, but they are twisting, warping and ignoring basic legal precedent in order to get him. So we've got to fight this, but not just because of Julian, who I have met and know in the embassy and admire, on a personal level, but because of the consequences of this, it will absolutely shut down any ability to shine a light into the inner workings of power, and that is its intent.
You know, the pressure from the public is building as well in support of freeing Julian Assange, including in our YouTube chat. We have many people posting free Assange, release him now, says John Glacken. Ronnie Hofsoy says, we need more people like Julian that find the courage to fight all types of secrecy around the globe by shining light on it all. Just do the right thing and set him free. John, what is it like for you to hear people, not only from world leaders, but also just average citizens from around the world coming together to support your son?
Oh, well, you know, pretty good. In my country, Australia, the entire political class, the leader of the opposition, Prime Minister, have made statements strongly supporting the release of Julian Assange. 88% of the Australian population in the last poll demand that Julian be sent home to his family. Mm. So he right across the, I mean, it was the first person to understand that this was a global concern was the attorney for the New York Times back in the Pentagon Papers day. Mm. And 4 years ago, he said that this matter is of global concern. And it's proven so with the support of presidents, prime ministers. The only people who are holding out, so to speak, are the Department of Justice. And they're sort of becoming mired in scandal.
Well, you mentioned, John,
people that can't adjudicate justice anywhere.
And meanwhile, John, you mentioned you are all, as Julian Assange's family, waiting for him to return home. And, of course, his wife, Stella, and their two sons are waiting for his return as well. Here's one more segment from Fault Lines.
Julian and I have two children, Gabriel, who's 5 and a half, and Max, who's going to be 4 in a few weeks' time. So Max was a few weeks old when Julian was arrested. The answer I give my children about why their father is in prison is he angered some very powerful people who put him in prison, that Julian is in prison because he did something right, not because he did anything wrong.
Kathleen, you represent clients like Julian Assange. Do you think he has any chance, realistically, of soon seeing freedom?
I think that we've seen in the past year momentum building in a way that we have not seen in the past. Mm. You know, for nearly a decade, Jesslyn Radak, who I work with, and myself have been saying that this war on whistleblowers and sources is a backdoor way on journalism and that this is the way it was going to go. And just in November, the 5 outlets that published the revelations with Assange, with WikiLeaks, came out calling for his release. We just had 7 members of Congress write a letter calling for his release, and 7 isn't a lot, but it is more than there's been before. And so, you know, defending Assange's journalism and calling for his release is becoming more mainstream.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but I think that, you know, we are seeing momentum in that direction in a way that we have not seen in the past decade.
And that's why we are keeping this discussion alive as well. John, in the brief last 30 seconds of our show, please tell me how much you want to see your son again in person out of prison.
Oh, well, you know, it's sort of heartrending, really, to examine it under those circumstances. My daughter, Severin, who's about 7 now, whenever I go overseas, she says, well, why don't you just get in a taxi and go to the jail and pick Julian up?
If it were only that easy.
I look forward to that day very much.
John, many are looking forward to that day. Thank you so much, and I apologize. We have to end our conversation for now because that is all the time we have for today. But thank you so much to our guests for joining us for this discussion. And you can always find us online at stream.aljazeera.com. Thank you for watching.